Tipperary, it's a long way to go.
It's a long way to Tipperary. Yeah, it's not so long anymore. You can get on a plane and get there pretty quickly. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about travel to Ireland on the show today. And a great guest for you as we talk about what you need to know if you're planning a trip to Ireland. Glenn Schmidt with us. He's back, travel writer, teacher, guide, storyteller, and he was with us last September when he talked about his book, which is titled Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel. He was expecting to talk with me, but I happened to be traveling myself. I was in Scotland. And Glenn, you had the fortune, perhaps, of talking with Jill Nadeau that time around.
We had a great time. We talked travel the whole time, but we did miss you.
Okay. Well, I actually had a chance to be on the air that I was in near Edinburgh during the fun drive and did a little interview with Jill about my travels at the time. Well, let's talk Ireland here for a minute. And as we talk, I hope you'll join in as you're listening in here. Have you visited Ireland? What do you recommend seeing in the country? What was your experience like traveling to Ireland? Love to hear from you. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Glenn, indeed, good to have you back. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Well, lots of things I expect to consider when traveling to Ireland. What are some of the kind of unique travel experiences you can have in Ireland?
You know, it's funny, the lead-in song, It's a Long Way to Tipperary, I never really connected it to this castle we rented in Tipperary, which is in central Ireland. It's a castle called Lisheen Castle, and it's a legitimate castle, and there were 16 of us. We rented the whole place for a week. And it was absolutely delightful. It was so huge that we kept losing people in it. And we'd say, well, where's Paul? Well, we think he's down, you know, down here, and we'd have to go look for him. But it was a delightful experience to rent your own castle.
Was it cold and damp?
You know, it's Ireland. You know, what do you expect there? One of the cool things we did, though, and if you rent... And it's not just renting a castle, but if you rent through VRBO or Airbnb or something, very often if you ask the host and tell them that you want one of your meals in the castle, you'd like it either made there or catered by some locals. And so we had an Irish meal there in this very ornate room, and we felt just like royalty, I think, you know, being served all these great Irish dishes. So it was a good way to end our stay at the castle.
Well, I always think about stews when I think about Irish food, but there's got to be more than that.
There is all sorts of things once you start digging into it. You know, if you like Irish food, there is a whole set of things that I was even looking at, things like shepherd's pie and cottage pie, Irish coffee, coal cannon, soda bread. And if you go to an Irish bakery there, they almost always have a place where you can sit down and enjoy it. It's not a bakery like we think. I mean, you go in there and you sit down and enjoy it. You don't have to wait to take out some food.
Yeah. And, I mean, there are, of course, the history of Ireland is fantastic and offers people a chance to see some things they're never going to see anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest reasons people travel to Ireland is for their heritage. In fact, some people go so far as to get dual citizenship in Ireland, which is very possible. You have to have, at least through the main door, you have to have either a parent or a grandparent who was born in Ireland. And then you can get through that particular door fairly easily. I did a similar thing. My ancestors are from Luxembourg. And so a few years ago, they kind of opened a side door for Americans to get in if they had Luxembourg ancestry. And so so now I've got dual citizenship in Luxembourg. I had to show up at City Hall in Luxembourg with all my papers in order. And I was all set to get my Luxembourg passport when COVID came along. And I, you know, we were set up. My son and I were going to go to the Luxembourg embassy in Washington, D.C. And they said, don't come. Okay, nobody was traveling then. 3 years later, Larry, I got an email from the Luxembourg embassy that said, okay, you can come now. And so we did. We planned a trip there. Went to D.C. with my son. We had a great time there. But we had some trouble. After we went to the embassy and got through the whole process, the next morning, my son got a call, and they said, there's a problem with your dad's application. Okay, what? He's smiling. You can't smile, Larry, in your passport application. So we had to go to a local drugstore there and get that done and go back to the Luxembourg embassy and get it done.
So what's the advantage, just this is a kind of an aside, to being a dual citizenship with Ireland or Luxembourg or wherever you would be a dual citizen?
Well, remember, this is the EU. So, you know, I'm and Ireland is also in the EU. They use the euro. They're one of 28 countries over there. And there are some, let's call them potential benefits. For example, my granddaughter, who is in middle school now, if she decides that, for example, that she wants to go to college over there, then she is treated as a Luxembourg citizen. There are also some possible medical benefits that you may have, because remember, everybody is covered under national health care in all of the EU countries. It gets a little tricky, though, once you get into the details, because every country is every country is different.
Yeah,
but if you're a Luxembourger and you're living in Spain, you know, you're going to tap into Spain's system, not Luxembourg's.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to Ireland. What's the best time of the year to visit Ireland in your mind?
You know, I'm going to give you two minds on this. One is mine and one is Rick Steves, a travel writer, who is, I believe Rick is one of the best voices out there to listen to.
He's a lot of fun to listen to and watch.
Yeah. So, you know, as far as, ask the question again, Larry, because I got sidetracked.
Well, the best time of the year to visit.
The best time of the year, according to Rick, is summer. And then he goes on to say, you know, if you go there in the shoulder seasons, you kind of avoid some crowds, and it's a little cheaper and, you know, a little easier to get around. But I really agree with him. The temperature never does get very warm in Ireland. An 80-degree day pretty much makes headlines over there. So it's it is much nicer. And avoiding the crowds is just not that difficult in Ireland. I mean, if you're going to the Cliffs of Moher, which I highly recommend, it's not like, you know, there's a phalanx of people looking over the cliffs. Just wander over to your own spot, and you've got it to yourself. So I would go in the summer.
Yeah. The Cliffs of Moher, what about, what's so inspiring about them?
They are not oversold, in my opinion. I think the scenery is just spectacular. You're right on the ocean there. The cliffs are about 650 feet up. So think of Granddad's Bluff in La Crosse. It's about the same height.
Yeah.
And you're that above the ocean. You've got the Inishir Islands, the Aran Islands, Inishir being the closest one, right off the coast. And I find it absolutely spectacular.
Glenn Schmidt, our guest today. I almost called you Rick Steves. I got Rick Steves on my head. But Glenn Schmidt, he's written a pretty darn good travel book as well. And talking with him about travel to Ireland, you know, got off onto some tangents here as we move along. But that's okay. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org.
Can I add something about the book?
Go ahead.
That fits in with Rick Steves here. And I can go on Amazon and look to see where my book is ranked, you know, as far as other books. And I found that I was the 18th ranked book when it came to travel books for seniors. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I didn't write this just for old people. And so I talked to my publisher. And I said, did you do this? I said, did you put me in that category? And she said, no, Amazon did that. Amazon knows who is buying your book.
That's a, and what's the title again?
The title?
Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel.
Exactly.
Our guest, Glenn Schmidt, today. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234 or email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at travel to Ireland today with our guest, Glenn Schmidt. It's great to have him with us as we talk about travel there. And I hope you'll join in. Lots of callers coming in. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. It's kind of an Irish theme today. At noon, we'll talk about theater that's performing right here in Wisconsin, including an Irish-themed play. And it really sounds like a fun play, and it actually opens this weekend in Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Rep is putting it on. So We'll learn all about that later on in the show. How expensive is it travel? Is travel to Ireland, Glenn? Yeah, and while you're there, I mean, the plane fares are not bad.
You know, I just looked that up this morning because I knew that question was going to come up, and I thought, well, okay, what is the latest on a flight to Ireland? And the answer is, let's say you're flying on April 1st. You can get there for $743 on American Airlines. Now, I would always check with Aer Lingus to see if they have any kind of a deal going.
Yeah.
But the American flight out of Madison, you know, for $743 and back, I think is a really quite a good deal. If you, there is an even cheaper deal, and that's regular economy. I don't mess with the basic economy. You can't take suitcases and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this is a regular economy quote. You can fly on Iceland Air for $548. So it is, it is really one of the cheapest places to fly to.
And then once you get there, I mean, staying, I mean, I'm told, or I think you even mentioned that, it's pretty common to have bed and breakfasts dotting throughout the country, for example.
It more than any other country in Europe, bed and breakfasts are the key. But it turns out they're a dying breed. 20 years ago, there were something like 4,000 bed and breakfasts in Ireland. There are fewer than 1,000 right now.
Wow.
400 kilometers away
in
the Atlantic Ocean.
What appears
Denmark's
to be...
Prime Minister has told Donald Trump that it is
up to
Greenland to decide its own future.
We're getting something
in
that we're coming
Trump
through my headsets
that
to increase its isn't exactly what we're talking about today.
Call comes
so,
Trump, of course,
Jeff Robbins, our technical director, his hair's on fire, I see, as he... He gets that taken care of. But now I think we have it taken care of. So so you were saying the bed and breakfasts are down three quarters.
Yeah, they are. They're still a good way to go. Larry, what the people used to do is they used to book with a company. They'd get vouchers. And so they'd kind of daisy chain their way through Ireland using the voucher. But now typically, I talked to a friend of mine named Britt, and I'll probably refer to him several times, because Britt is a fanatic about going to Ireland, and he's been there 32 times now. And so I talked to him for an hour the other day just to make sure I'd get some things right that are currently happening. And he said he now uses Airbnb or VRBO and books a place. So what seems to have happened, Larry, is the second B in B&B is kind of washing out. So the breakfast part. So you can go and rent a place through Airbnb, but it's not like anybody's going to come in and make breakfast for you. You've rented the place, kind of like that castle we rented.
Yeah. What about hotels and so forth?
I will often do hotels there, particularly when I'm in Dublin, and they're similar in price to what you'd see over here. And I'll tell you what, the euro is as good as it's been. in a long, long time. It's $1.03 for 1 euro. So they're almost at parity. And I've been to Europe at times when the euro was cost about $1.35 or $1.40. So Europe is a pretty good deal right now.
Tim in Stratford has a suggestion for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tim.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I was just going to make a suggestion that Irish Fest has a whole area of, speaking of Aer Lingus, like the guest was, you can go to Ireland for less than $1,100 a person. You get 8 nights stay, you get airfare, and you get a car rental for $1,100 at the Aer Lingus booth. And that was a great way for us. We had 2 nights in Dublin, 2 in Donegal, 2 in Kilkenny, I believe, and then 2 in Galway for $1,099 a person. And there's lots of other booths that do the same thing with or without cars, with bus travel, or very reasonable. Oh. And Irish Fest is August 11th through the 13th, I believe, in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Got it. Tim, thanks a lot for calling. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
You know, I think it's a great deal. And I've heard this before, too. And my friend Britt goes to Irish Fest every year. He's the guy who's been there 32 times. And he said the same thing. Is Tim still with us? I'd like to ask him about driving over there, if he actually drove.
Tim, did you drive over there?
Yeah, you just got to, when you look out the window, you always...
Oh, we lost him. You're driving on the sort of the wrong side of the road.
Here is the thing. If you're going to go over there, the best way to see Ireland is driving around it. I mean, Tim did it right. However, it's very intimidating. Because not only are you driving on the wrong side of the road, there are a number of other things you have to take into account that you may not think about. First of all, can you drive a standard transmission? If you can't, then you're going to pay a pretty heavy premium for having an automatic transmission. Now, I like it. I grew up with a standard transmission.
I did, too.
but think about this. You have to shift with your left hand. Okay, so now...
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Exactly. And not only that, but let's say that British roads are an 8 in level of difficulty. Irish roads are a 10. Yeah. And the reason is because of the sharp corners they have. There's no shoulder on the road. Yeah. What you have instead of a shoulder is a rock wall shrubbery that is going to do damage to your car. You can always tell when a tourist car over there, because they don't have the side view mirrors anymore.
But that's Tim, I thank you very much for that information. So Irish Fest might be a place to go to get yourself lined up for a trip.
Absolutely.
Especially the first time around. I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad. So this is a long time ago, but we drove on the wrong side of the road, quote, unquote, wrong side. And I had to learn to do that pretty quickly there. And the roads there are kind of similar to the ones that you were talking about.
Can I add one thing about driving there? Because I was looking in my book to make sure that everything I had in there was up to speed. And one thing wasn't. You have to make sure you have good insurance for reasons that we just talked about.
Yeah.
When we rented that castle, one of my friends was on his way from the airport to the castle, and he got run off the road, blew both the tires on the left-hand side because, you know, there's no shoulders, so he blew the tires. Same thing happened to my wife in Britain. And so what I do when I drive over there is I point my right headlight directly at their right headlight of the car coming at me, and I don't move over until I'm about maybe 30 yards away from the car. So if you think that game of chicken isn't something that you want to do, you might think about another way of travel over there.
Or having somebody else drive you around.
Having somebody else drive you. Now, you actually can hire people to drive you around. Or there's some other choices too. Now, there is a train network in Ireland, but here's the problem with it. Almost everything radiates out of Dublin. So you can take a train, and it's very comfortable to get to Galway. But if you want to then go from Galway down to the Ring of Kerry, you got to go back to Dublin and then radiate back out. So taking a train is not going to get you all the way around Ireland, not easily anyway.
March in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, March.
Hi there, Larry. So I was in Ireland in October, this past October. And fortunately, the weather was perfectly wonderful. I think we had hit one day of rain and had a great time. My interest is in ancient things. So we went to Newgrange and Knowth. And, oh, my gosh, if you're interested in kind of Neolithic tombs and dolmens and all that sort of thing, Ireland is a wonderful place to go.
Oh, March, thanks for calling. And I know, Glenn, you've got something to comment on there.
I do that. Newgrange, I had the same reaction to it. It was a very, very powerful place. Newgrange is actually a 5,000-year-old passage tomb that is older than the Egyptian pyramids. And, you know, it's kind of built with the winter solstice in mind. So, you know, if you go there, the sun is aligned in the right way. But it is a very powerful monument. So I totally agree with the caller.
March, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Pat in Oregon. Pat, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
A couple of experiences my husband and I had. This was many years ago. Probably 45 years ago, we did drive. We did have a stick shift. I did learn to drive it in a gully wash leaving the airport in Dublin, which wasn't pretty, but we managed. However, there were two things we did that were serendipity. One was I was having my watch battery replaced. So we wandered into a store where we loved the glassware. And the guy said, we won't ship the glassware to you because there's too much breakage. But I'll tell you where the guy is that makes it, and he will ship it. So we found on this back road, we found a guy who blows glass in a barn. And he let us walk all around. He just said, stay out of the way of the oven and don't step on the gas lines. We could take pictures. We could do anything we wanted in there. And we did end up buying glassware that was shipped home.
Outstanding. So it arrived safely from the sound of it, Glenn.
Did you go to Waterford for their crystal?
We went and we did buy a couple of little things, but you couldn't walk around right on top of the blowers. You know, you had to stay back behind a half wall or something. Yeah. The other thing we did was we drove, the gal at the car rental said, be sure you drive over the Gap of Dunloe.
Ah, okay. What's the Gap of Dunloe? I wonder what that we lost her now.
Well, Waterford, I looked this up because my wife and I went to Waterford and we did buy some crystal there, and it's very expensive, very heavy, very beautiful, but mostly they don't make it there anymore. But they still do have a showroom where you can buy it, and it's a pretty Irish thing to do. So, and that area of the country down by Waterford, I found that was also a very pretty place to be.
Chris in Sun Prairie. Chris, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi, Glenn.
Chris. Hi, Chris. I know who you are.
Yeah, I was curious about the castle. That sounded like a really interesting option. And I was just wondering, is that comparable, like if you have 16 people, to getting a better breakfast or a hotel, or is that a little bit more on the higher end?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Chris.
The castle itself, I looked to see what the going rate is today. I don't remember what I paid for it, but it's $1,600 for a week. And so basically $100 per person because we fit 16 people into it. For the whole week, yes. That's 1,600
a A day.
A day, yeah.
I was going to say, it's got to be $100 a day.
It is $100 a day. What I found is that we were kind of an anomaly because we rented it from Saturday to Saturday. But you can rent Lachine Castle. You can rent out rooms in it most any other time if there isn't a big group there. So I would go on their site. They're pretty easy to find to see if that does fit you. But I will tell you this, Tipperary's in the middle of the country, and it is kind of, while it's central to going to other places, it is kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's a county, too. It's not a lot of people think it's a city.
Right, right. The nearest city is Thurles, T-H-U-R-L-E-S. And what I remember about Thurles is horse racing is big in Ireland. And we actually went to the horse races, which are different from here. The horses seem like they're running all the way to Canada, but they're also jumping over things. So it's kind of a steeplechase. But the betting is different, Larry. You have to go to your own bookie who is standing on a soapbox. And so there's maybe 15 or 20 of these bookies lined up with different odds. And so I found a bookie named John Carey. And I thought, well, what could go wrong here? So I bet on a horse. My horse was in the lead all the way until he got to the last jump. And then he decided he'd prefer to walk around it. And apparently that's not something that's acceptable. So I didn't win any money from John Carey.
I remember the first bet. I was in Trinidad. I went with the owner of one of the horses. One of the races where her horse wasn't in it. So I bet on another horse, and the horse finished first, but unfortunately the jockey fell off coming out of the gate. So the horse ran around the whole way and finished first, but of course you don't win any money if the jockey isn't with the horse.
That's a problem.
Marnie in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Marnie.
Hi. I'm just enthusiastically recommending that people not be afraid of driving there. I've been there 3 times, and twice my husband wanted me to drive because I just loved it, driving on the wrong side of the road and getting used to all of that. Didn't take long at all. The time that I loved the most was with my mom a couple of years before she died, because she'd always wanted to take her mom to Ireland. And we landed in Shannon. We got a rental car. You're right about the stick shift. And it broke down within, maybe half an hour left, maybe 15 minutes from the airport. Luckily, I could pull to the side. We walked to this adorable cottage where this wonderful, about 5'1" woman invited us in. We used her phone. This is before cell phones. And the airport brought us a new and much better car. But my only other advice for people, I don't know if it's true anymore, but when the bars let out, if they do ever let out, when we were driving then, there were men who were inebriated a bit, and they took their bikes to the bars, and they wore these suit jackets, so they looked like rumpled businessmen, but the roads are very narrow, and you have to, when you go around the corner, here would be this guy wobbling on a bicycle. So that's the only cautionary tale that we really have other than the car breaking down. But do it.
Marnie, thanks for calling. Comment, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm not intimidated by driving. I think it's fun, too. I agree with you. You have to know yourself and your own limitations. The other thing I would urge you is, they're kind of a surprise problem, and that is when you're in a parking lot and you just, you know, if there aren't any real lines where you are or anything, you will gravitate in the same direction that the Irish will to try to pass each other. So you're always playing this game, this little dance when you're trying to pass each other. Now, as far as Irish bars, that could take a whole show, Larry, so we could do that. But in Tipperary, we found a place called Jim of the Mills. And Jim of the Mills is kind of this old farmhouse that is only open on Thursday night for music, but it's open all night. And so we went there, and you just have to remember the main rule when you're sitting around the hearth and all these people are playing nameless Irish instruments around you. The main rule is don't sit in the dog's chair. And if you can remember that, you're going to be fine. Yeah, they'll bring you all the Guinness that you need.
Oh, Marty, thank you again for calling in. You know, bicycles came up, and somebody else is wondering, how safe is it to bike in Ireland?
You know, we just heard from Chris a few minutes ago, and I had this conversation with her. And in fact, it is in my book where I said my recommendation is don't do it. Because I find it just even walking on some of the narrow places, narrow streets to be somewhat intimidating because there's always a bus coming around the corner. However, I did go on YouTube and watched a video, and I recommend you do this too, especially if you're thinking about biking. I found this really lovely young couple who biked the Wild Atlantic Way. That's what they actually call it, the Wild Atlantic Way. And they were just the cutest couple. They would knock on somebody's door at the end of the day and say, you know, can we put up our tent in your garden, in your yard? And the couple would always say, well, of course, and come on in, we'll give you a meal and maybe a shower. And then they'd go on to the next one. But then they showed pictures of them being pelted by hail and by rain and wind and no place to hide. There's no there's not a tree or anything else. So if you're 20 years old and don't mind a little discomfort, that's fine. And you can probably work that out. But if you're going to bike over there, make sure you know where you're going because not every place is suitable for it.
Our guest today, Glenn Schmidt, and his book is titled Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel, talking about mostly about Ireland. We've gotten astray a little bit along the way, but that's okay, too. Number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Are there tours? I mean, a lot of people would rather just have somebody else do a lot of the work. When in Scotland, we had Hidden Links Travel took care of us. But what about travel groups?
I'm going to make some specific recommendations. These are tour companies I have used in the past with some success. And starting with Gate One Travel, for about $1,700, you can do a fly and drive, much as was described by a previous caller. And they just, you know, that's pretty much it. That's what you get, the fly and drive. Go Ahead Tours for $2,400 will put you on the bus and include a bunch of meals with it, and that's fine. Road Scholar, you've probably dealt with them. Mm-hmm. And if you want to learn something along the way, that's a good one. Globus has a 13-day tour for $3,200. And if you really want to go upscale, go to Overseas Adventure Tours. But that's going to cost you about $5,000 for 17 days. Now, I'm going to add one more thing, which is really popping up the last maybe 3 years, and that is cruise ships have discovered the British Isles and Ireland. And before, it was really quite uncommon, but nowadays you can take tours that go all the way around, and I found one that takes off in April, and it leaves from Fort Lauderdale. Now, this is what's called a repo cruise. Are you familiar with those?
No.
Okay, a repo cruise is a repositioning cruise. And what that means is all those boats that are in the Caribbean, you know, Princess Cruises and everybody mm-hmm. else, they got to go somewhere after the winter season's over. They go to Alaska, they go to Europe, and they used to sail empty. And that's when the companies decided, oh, wait a minute, let's put passengers on it, and we'll call it a repositioning cruise. And it's usually a pretty good deal. So this trip on a Prince's ship in April is a 24-day trip, but 12 of the days are at sea. You do not get off the boat. And then the other 12 are around the British Isles and Ireland. And the price for that is $2,500, so about $100 a day, which is terrific. Now, my wife won't let me go on it. And and she said, well, you get seasick. Okay, all right, she's kind of exaggerated. Once in a while I'll get seasick, but it's usually on the English Channel. which happens to be where this is. So it might get a little rough, but you know, if that doesn't bother you, might want to check that out.
John in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm calling in to talk to Glenn.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Glenn, I've been reading your book, and I'm really enjoying it, first off. And I want to say that it's almost like traveling with you the way you write. I'm really enjoying it. And secondly, I do realize that I have my grandmother on my father's side is from Cork County, Ireland. So I would be interested in talking to you sometime a little more about checking into getting citizenship there.
Yeah.
John, thank you for calling. That is a very good question, and it's good for you for knowing that. You will find also that when you talk to people in Ireland, the Irish are really, really interested in talking to Americans if they have Irish heritage. They will ask you, you know, what county are you from, and you know, what's your grandfather's name, and they will go into a lot of that. So that's a really good reason to travel over to Ireland.
How you have a site or a website, Glenn?
I do have a website. I'm not even going to refer to it, though, because it's I'd rather send people right to Amazon.
And
they can read about the book. They can read an excerpt from it. Just type in the name, and you'll get an idea of what the book is all about.
Glenn Schmidt. And the book is titled Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel. And let's see, Brian in Shorewood, we'll go to you. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Glenn. I have a question for you. We're looking to visit Ireland next fall, and we would fly into Dublin. And there appears to be easy train access to visit Belfast. So first question, have you been there, and what were the best things you visited in Belfast? Mm-hmm.
That is a gap in my travel. A couple of times I've planned to go to Northern Ireland. I have not made it up there yet. There are my friend Britt, who talks about it, does highly recommend going up in that direction. But personally, I haven't been there yet.
And the and the train, I'm just not sure on that either. So. Brian, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email. We've got some emails to deal with here, too. talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at travel in Ireland today with our guest, Glenn Schmidt. Glenn is having fun talking with him about travel. His book is Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel. Questions for him? I hope you'll join in. You can email us to talk@WPR.org or phone 800-642-1234. Corrine in Two Rivers has something for us. Corrine, hi.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm really appreciating the travel information. I just wanted to give a shout out to some of the alternative ways that people can actually travel. There's great ways to save money as well as meeting people in their local areas by house sitting. I don't know, Glenn, if you've ever done anything like that. But there's also ways that you can go and work on people's farms. It's not always the traditional vacation, but if people have time, it's a great way to really immerse yourself in the culture, not just in Ireland, but all over Europe and the United States, Australia, New Zealand.
Corrine, thank you so much for calling. And I wanted to just add to this before you comment, Glenn, that Walder in Osseo emailed us and highly recommended this site, trustedhousesitters.com, for inexpensive travel to Ireland or any place else. They spent 2 weeks last summer in Kerry County in a beautiful home taking care of 3 dogs. And from that base, they took 2-day-long bus tours and visited Tralee and Killarney.
I love that idea. I've not done that personally, but I'm kind of from the Rick Steves school that the closer you get to the people, the better your travel experience is going to be. And it doesn't necessarily mean spending more money in order to have a better experience. It doesn't work that way. So what these folks are doing, the idea of working on a farm, yeah, I don't know if I want to go that far, but what a great idea to get close to the land and close to the people.
Yeah, and that was TrustedHouseSitters.com that Walter mentioned. Corrine, thank you so much. Jim, and there's a travel little wrinkle coming up that I read about and that you certainly know about relating to travel in Europe. And do you want to talk about that, Glenn, before we go any further?
I do. Americans have been, you know, very fortunate over the last 30 years that in going to Europe and other countries, we really almost never have to have a visa or any extra paperwork. Well, I'm afraid that is changing. And if you go to Great Britain now, they've put in extra paperwork that you have to apply for before you leave here, or you will not be allowed in the country. Now, the European Union is going to do something very similar to that, and it's going to cost you about, you know, 10 or 12 bucks or something like that. So it's really not about the money, but it's about getting the paperwork done ahead of time. The one for the European Union has been pushed back several times now, and if your trip is scheduled after May, you may have to have one of these non-visas, we'll call them, but you may not. They may decide to postpone it again, but just watch out for that. Talk to your travel agent. Your airline should let you know because they've got trouble, too, if you get off the plane and they're not going to let you into the country.
So something to be sure, and this is where a travel agent comes in really handy.
I love travel agents. It's unfortunate that local travel agents have become more scarce the last few years. There's a lot of online travel agents, but you don't always know who you can trust out there, too. So, you know, I like going to my local travel agent and having her figure something out that I can't.
I do as well. Jim in Mauston emailed us just about visiting the Cliffs of Moher several years ago. Jim crawled up to the edge for a look straight down to the rocky shoreline. He didn't have the nerve to stand at the edge, but a gentleman nearby stood with what appeared to have his toes over the edge, and that made Jim shiver and his hair to stand straight up.
I saw that too, Larry, and I thought, what are these people thinking? And I didn't get that close to the edge, but I will tell you this, that if that were in America, OSHA would close it down in a minute.
Brian in Iola emailed us with some recommendations to take a deep dive into Irish culture. The Fled, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this, Fled Sheol, a midsummer festival. And he says, go for the full 3 days, but plan ahead. Fled is in F-L-E-A-D-H, F-L-E-A-D-H, C-H-E-O-I-L. It's a midsummer festival. Mary in Mosinee emailed us. You hear a lot about Irish crystal. Don't forget the Bealach, the Irish pottery. They visited this village in Northern Ireland and came home with a couple of pieces, and it's much easier to bring home than crystal.
I will tell my wife about this.
There you go. Well, what do you recommend doing in Dublin?
You know, Dublin's about the size of Milwaukee. All right, so think of it, you know, it's not a major metropolis, but it's not a small village either. So some of the things that I do, I would definitely go over to Trinity College and take a look at the Book of Kells. I found that a very sublime experience. It's a very walkable town to be in. You'll hear about the Temple Bar. The Temple Bar, yes, there is a bar with that name, but the Temple Bar refers to the whole area, not just to that one particular bar. So you want to go there. The Irish Emigration Museum is there. So we've talked about your Irish history, and that's where you're going to find about that. Now, one thing I did was a literary pub crawl. And I recommend that because the stories they tell you about James Joyce and George Bernard Shaw and going from one pub to another and their experiences, you get the Irish pubs, you get the Irish writers, you get the Irish stories. It all comes together in one.
What about Galway? I always think about the song. Was it Bing Crosby that sang, "Here again the ripples of the trout stream, the women in the meadows making hay"? I think it was.
I don't think I can hum that.
But... I can hum it, but I don't want to. I might lose listeners. You never know.
We rented a place right on the sea in Galway for a week. And I like Galway. And if you want some great seafood, if you want some great Irish music, Galway is the place to go. And one thing we actually did was the islands out there, the Aran Islands, we just took a quick tour. I mean, we had our own car, but we rented a, we took for 45 euros, I think it was, we took an all-day tour on a bus that took us to the Cliffs of Moher and then put us on the ferry boat out to the Aran Islands. And so we're on the island of Inishere, and I remember just kind of falling into a walk around the island with these all these ancient stone, you know, walkways. And I was walking with a Canadian professor who was there on a golf trip with his son. And so, Larry, everything comes together in golf.
and what there's some pretty good golf in Ireland. We might as well.
There is some good golf there. I'm planning on doing what you did. I'm planning on playing some golf in Scotland this year. But after that, Ireland is next on my itinerary. There are some 300 courses that you can play in Ireland. And remember, Ireland is about the size of South Carolina. So imagine packing 300 golf courses. You know, it's hard to, you know, you hit your nine iron in any direction, you're going to land on a green.
And I do like the idea of just visiting some of the local courses and sort of getting in tune with the local courses. We did that in Scotland, and I'd probably do that in Ireland as well.
And we're planning on doing that in Scotland, too, is we've got some friends who are joining our group who live over there. So that's really the best way to see it from the inside.
Did you kiss the Blarney Stone while you were there?
I will put that in my list of least favorite things to do in Ireland. It's pretty overrated.
And somebody might say, what is the Blarney Stone?
Well, it's in Blarney Castle, and you got to go upside down, and you have to kiss that. But I don't say much negative about Ireland because it's such a delightful place. But probably the worst museum I've ever been in was in Limerick. Frank McCourt, remember he wrote Angela's Ashes?
Yeah.
Well, they've got a museum that revolves around him, and it turns out it's his old school. And it turns out there's very little about him in it. And the only, and there are like three docents walking around. The only one who had actually met Frank was me. and there was very little about him in there. And so I wouldn't recommend that particular one either.
And certainly gardens. I would think there'd be some nice gardens to see and with the castles and all.
When I was in Galway, we went up to an abbey? Kyle Moher Abbey. And I found Kyle Moher Abbey spectacular. It's a Benedictine monastery, and it's got a Victorian walled garden. But you know what I loved about it the most? I've been in a lot of gardens in Europe, but this was a vegetable garden. and so, you know, it's like this is more useful than the flower garden you're typically going to see.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, Glenn. I hope we can do this again, maybe talk about a different country another time. Thanks so much.
I'm happy to go wherever you want to take me.
Well, it's been fun. Yeah. Glenn Schmidt, his book, Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel. And we had a nice person talking well in favor of the book. It's really entertainingly written, and you might feel like you're right along there with Glenn when you read his book. Coming up, there's an Irish musical appearing at the Milwaukee Rep, and we'll learn about that and a whole lot more. Stay with us. And watch the
barefoot gossams at their play.
Oh, I thought I heard the old man say, leave her, Johnny, leave her. Tomorrow will be a new day, but it's time for you to leave her.
Ah, that's Leave Her Johnny from the musical The Crack, which will premiere at the Milwaukee Rep starting this weekend. Larry Mueller for WPR News. And today we're talking about theater that's made right here in Wisconsin with a couple of guests. One of them, Mark Clements, is the artistic director at the Milwaukee Rep, joining us by phone. Mark, welcome.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Jen Uphoff-Gray, our other guest, would be by Google Meet, I think. She's the creator of World Premiere Wisconsin, and Jen's also the founding artistic director at Forward Theater Company. And Jen Uphoff-Gray, welcome. Thank you for joining in as well.
Thanks for having me.
As we talk with our guests, we want to hear from you. Let us know why maybe you love theater made right here in Wisconsin. Which original plays or musicals are your favorite? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mark, I want to have you start by talking about The Crack. I looked at some of the little videos that are on the Milwaukee Rep website, and it sounds inspiring and uplifting and like a whole lot of fun. And the world premiere is coming this weekend. And maybe you should mention first what the title means, The Crack. And it's spelled C-R-A-I-C, which I think is Gaelic.
Yeah, it's some people say Gaelic, some people say Irish or Gaelca. It means having fun, basically, having the crack. And had the genesis of the production came out of people saying that to me a lot when I was working in Ireland, 16 or 17 years ago.
Yeah, and I like the term, actually. We had a great crack last night, or I'm going for a crack. I love that. Well, what gave you the idea for the musical?
Yeah, I was asked to do a project, work on a project, on the script and the direction of a project. Came through an independent producer who'd got this guy who had approached him about a story, but was a business person who had a close association with a really talented musician called John Hurley. And he wanted somebody from the theater world to pull it all together. And it was just this great gig where I was shipped in. I was living in London at the time, but every two or three weeks we'd either go flying to Dublin for a long weekend or to County Kerry, and specifically Dingle, where we spent a lot of time. This beautiful little village in Southern Ireland and County Kerry. And it was a gig where you were just listening to the best of the best of Irish traditional musicians who would come in. There was a lot of tourists there, but also a lot of the indigenous folk there were just sort of coming in as well. So there was this fusion of tourists and people who lived in the area and coming in for a night of crack, which a session, as they called it, would be an evening-long thing over pints with little kind of stops in between. Somebody would get up, tell a story. Somebody would sing a song. A band would get together. And it was just so much fun and just very inspiring. And you just left very full and full of joy and sometimes full of a little Irish other spirit as well. And I had always had this idea of trying to find a theater piece that would encapsulate and try and capture that lightning in a bottle. And so that's the genesis of the idea.
Oh, and maybe give us an overview of the plot. then, which sounds, it almost sounds like you gave us an overview in your description there a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually four or five characters in the play. So it's like a sort of piece of meta theater in that there's a sort of concert within a concert. And basically, the story is that we have this band, and this guy used to be a big local star in Dingle, but left to be in a big international band and has come back, just surprises everybody on a key night 10 years later, and how it throws them all into all the other protagonists into a bit of a tailspin. And and amidst time, they play some of the best Irish music that we all know and love.
Yeah. How difficult, or maybe it wasn't difficult at all, to find actors who could both act and play the music?
Yeah. I mean, well, over the last few years, we've done a number of shows, including the piece we did, Rum Bambi Rum, with Gordon Gaynor from the Violent Femmes, and we brought like 14 acting musicians. One of those musicians is in this cast. And that kind of really, spun this project forward. There's something still magical, and there's this whole kind of culture, subculture in the acting community in America who are like as really great actors and can play often multiple instruments at a level that you would expect of a professional pit musician. And it's been really fun marrying those two and finding projects and stories to build around those performers. And, you know, people can't get enough. I can't get enough. And I enjoy making that kind of theater right now. I'm really, really having fun with these folk.
Jen Uphoff-Gray, I mean, is this an example, I think, of our Wisconsin theater scene, which I think is pretty good. How strong is it, really?
I think that we punch way above our weight here in Wisconsin theater. And that's really at every different level that theater is getting created. So you've got spectacular professional companies, with Milwaukee Rep being the flagship here in the state, but American Players, Northern Sky, Forward, Milwaukee Chamber, Renaissance, Next Act. I mean, there are wonderful professional theaters. There is an incredibly robust community theater scene across the state, great companies doing youth theater, educational theater. There's a lot going on here that people would be surprised to know about.
Yeah. What do you think's behind the success? I mean, all these groups, and I've you ran off a bunch of names there, and I think I've been to most of them, or maybe all of them. What's behind the success?
Well, I do think that theater and really art in general is at its very strongest when it is created in conversation with its audience. And I think we're pretty good about that here in Wisconsin. And I think a project like Mark is talking about is a great example of work that's being generated here to start a dialogue with your audience or scratch an itch of something that they're seeking. I mean, we just, our most recent production here at Forward was also a world premiere, also by a Wisconsin playwright, Heidi Armbruster. She wrote this sort of comedic murder mystery called Murder Girl that was set in a Northwoods supper club. We sold out every seat for every performance. People were so excited to see a show like that. And I think that having that relationship with your audience, understanding them, it's not just, you know, a sort of Broadway tourist audience, and there's nothing wrong with that. But this is a very different kind of art that we make here in Wisconsin, and I think those relationships are deep and long-lasting.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. On the other end, or on the other side, what are the challenges that Wisconsin theaters face?
There's no funding. We float between being 50th and 49th in the country in arts funding per capita. In a really good year, we wrestle with Mississippi or Alabama for that bottom slot. And it's really challenging. It should be embarrassing for everybody who lives here, especially because the arts sector is one of the great economic generators for our state. And I have a lot of conversations with folks who say, oh, I don't know if the state or the counties or the cities can afford to support the arts. And I'm like, no, the arts are supporting the cities and the counties and the state with the revenue that we generate. And it is an enormous challenge and one that I deeply hope will get addressed in my lifetime.
Yeah, well, I think both of you have some experience to share on the next question I have. And maybe I'll start back with Mark. How much work goes into building an original play or musical from the ground up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different approach. And it depends upon your resource available and what the prioritization of that resource and availability of that resource is within the current in the company at any given time, to what you can, how you can do it and want to approach. I want to say I think we've been very fortunate. We created a fund, the John Jack D. Lewis New Play Development Fund, and where people who donate to that part of our theater operation is a restricted fund. It means it can only go towards the development of new work. It could be anything from commissioning a play, of course, or flying a playwright in to work with us or talk with us or provide an extra week or two of rehearsal to provide workshops to make that short, that show, you know, which is like an unknown. I always joke it's a bit like the theatrical version of base jumping. You don't really know it's a terribly good idea until the parachute deploys. But, you know, it's fun doing it. And I think we, you know, theaters like The Rep and Forward, you know, I think we, I don't want to speak for Jen, but I think we all take it as part of our responsibility in a not-for-profit setup to try and provide the pipeline for new works and tap into local resource, you know, which World Premier Wisconsin is doing and trying to put the spotlight on writers in that particular area where we can as well.
Yeah. And maybe, Jen, you could tell us more about World Premier Wisconsin. What's your coalition's goal and so forth?
Sure. And I'll build on what Mark said. It's absolutely right. I mean, Forward's a company that does contemporary work. And every play that we produce, and I'm not talking about the world premieres, but, you know, every other play that we produce, it exists in the world because some theater company somewhere invested resources in developing it, in helping the playwright with the script and getting those first productions up and running. And so, yes, exactly, Mark. It's a responsibility we have to, you know, pardon the pun, but pay it forward. You know, we invest in new plays that other theaters will then go on to do, and it's how we build this robust ecosystem, not just here in Wisconsin, but all over the country. So World Premier Wisconsin was an idea that we hatched back in late 2018 for a statewide festival of new works. And we spent several years putting it together. And of course, the pandemic happened in the middle of all of that. The goal, there were really three goals in starting this festival. One was to support and encourage the production of new works. One was to build relationships between theater makers across the state, whether it was staffs at these, you know, sort of regional theaters or folks working in community theaters, educational, what have you. And then the third goal was to tell a really positive story, both here in Wisconsin, but also nationally, about the really incredible generative work that is being done here in Wisconsin theater. And folks tend to think that only, you know, bus and truck touring productions happen. That couldn't be farther from the truth. So, we built all these relationships, and in the spring of 2023, we had our first World Premier Wisconsin. And in the 4 months of that festival, there were 49 World Premier plays and musicals developed in 22 communities across the state. It was a phenomenal success. And we're excited to build on it as we bring World Premier Wisconsin back in 2026.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Talking with Jen Uphoff-Gray, creator of World Premier Wisconsin and the founding artistic director at Forward Theater Company, Mark Clements, artistic director at the Milwaukee Rep. And he's telling us a lot of things, but really zeroing in a little bit on The Crack. It's a world premiere coming up this weekend, a wonderful Irish musical. And looking forward to talking more about that as well and hearing from you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at wpr.org. I'm Larry Mailer for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. We're taking a look at supporting the future of theater, and we're looking at premieres in the Badger State, and one of them will be premiering this weekend, the Irish musical, The Crack. It's an Irish-inspired musical set to premiere at the Milwaukee Rep. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Dennis in Two Rivers has a question. Let's go there first. Hi, Dennis.
Larry, saying Milwaukee Rep, I was just wondering, is that a repertory theater? And if so, how does repertory theater differentiate from regular theater? And he mentioned actors playing instruments, which I guess in a biz would be a double threat. So if we're encouraging a double threat, should we say break both legs?
I don't know about that, Dennis, but how does a repertory theater differ from a regular theater? Dennis wants to know. Jen?
I might give that to Mark. Since
all right, Mark,
the repertory
go ahead.
Theater.
Yeah, I think repertory theater goes back a long way. The rep was from repertoire, which meant that shows would come in and out. So actually, a company like American Players Theatre up in Spring Green, they do a number of shows which, they'll bring back in and out through the season. So they'll have four or five, and some of the big festivals like Stratford, Ontario, do similar things. The rep is also just a generic term. I've looked this up years ago. I'd have to check again, but a Wikipedia search will show that it's usually in modern parlance used to describe a theater that is a producing theater like us and Forward, as opposed to a receiving house, which might be like one Overture in Madison and the Marcus Center in the Performing Arts Center in Milwaukee, where you're having big tours of Wicked and Jersey Boys and that thing. I think that's a fairly reductive way of describing it, but that's the best shot I've got.
I think that's a pretty, you gave it a really good shot there, I think. Thank you so much for that response, Mark. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234. Email, how could we here in Wisconsin encourage more original and excellent theater? Someone wants to know.
Well, whoever it is that wrote that, we love you and thank you. And there are so many wonderful ways that you can support a robust theater in your community, in your state. The single best way is to be a patron who comes to the theater, and even better, a subscriber who will sign up for the slate of shows at your favorite theater or theaters, plural. Obviously, being a donor is great, but just being an advocate amongst the people that you know, bring them to a show. If you're an avid theater goer and you want to see those houses full, bring a friend and then bring another friend.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Phil in Menominee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Well, you were earlier talking about theater all over the state, but you were focusing on professional theaters. And I think you need to recognize that theater in Wisconsin is strong because it starts at the public schools, both with the schools and with independent people who want to teach kids how to act and sing and dance. That Wisconsin Public Television does an hour show every spring highlighting the best musical numbers from shows produced, unfortunately, only within 50 miles of Madison. But it's excellent quality of shows all around that area. But we're more than 50 miles from Madison. But we have excellent shows in the elementary school, in the middle school, in the high school. And Eau Claire has excellent school productions and has college productions and college productions at UW-Stout, UW-Eau Claire. I assume the others. I don't know what the others are doing. But there's excellent productions and people working with young people to teach them the elements of acting and singing and dancing, starting at the middle school so that they can do things like Annie Jr. or there's lots of Broadway shows that have shorter versions for like middle school could do, and the high schools could do full-length productions. So they're doing excellent productions.
You've hit on something, and probably Mark and Jen both. Jen, we'll start with you on Phil's comment about the work that happens in our schools, the plays.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. It is all part of this theater ecosystem, and I think that no one part of the ecosystem is more important than the other. We all need each other. So, you know, the what's happening in middle and high schools and in colleges, and what's happening in community theaters, and what's happening in professional theaters like Mark's and like mine, all of it comes together in really important ways. And it's one of the reasons why World Premiere Wisconsin was conceived and built, not just focusing on professional theater, but on theater happening in all of these different parts of the field. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And any funding and support that can go into our schools builds the theater artists and the theater audiences of the future.
Mark, did you start out in school?
I did not. I actually, my parents were professional actors, so I spent most of my childhood trying to avoid the industry that I've ended up in. So I'm not a really particularly good example of that. But I think everything that Jen says is right. And, you know, the call of Phil, you know, he's right. There's a lot of unsung heroes, you know, in that field. My daughter goes, you know, participates in the school productions in her school. And, you know, these are really meaningful things to the kids. In fact, funnily enough, we are in tech for the crack right now, tech rehearsal. And yesterday in one of the little lulls in the proceedings, all of the that cast, the five members of the cast, were all talking about being in a school production, what it was, what they did, what was a high point, a low point, and how those experiences were seminal experiences for all of them in kind of wanting to be a professional. And I don't think that's the be all and end all. When I think of companies like First Stage here in Milwaukee, terrific children's or young person's theater, I think the idea is about participation, collaboration. I think the kids that we have, 20 kids in Christmas Carol every year, which is going to be 50 years old next year. So there are so many kids who, you know, were like, have been Tiny Tim or one of the characters, Martha Cratchit or whatever, and have, you know, some of them have gone into the industry and some have just gone into other walks of life, but have found that experience of having to be in a company and be responsible to your company members, which, you know, we teach very strongly in that side of our operation, is a really, you know, character-building, valuable building block in life.
I agree, and probably means that those kids are going to wind up coming to a lot of the productions after they get out and get in the workforce.
Yeah, very much so. And we see that all the time. You know, suddenly I'll be in the car park and someone will pull over and go, "Hey, Mark," and it's some kid that I last saw at 12 and now with a mustache. Driving a Dodge something or other. You know, so good.
I understand the Milwaukee Rep is working on a new edition. It's going to be called the Associated Bank Theater Center Complex.
Yeah.
Mark, maybe you could tell us more about that.
Yeah, it's basically a new building on the existing site that we have. We wanted to stay in the downtown area, had this big dream. Fortunately, it was a dream. It was an $80 million dream, and we managed to raise pretty much the money primarily in the last 2 years. We started launching it pre-pandemic, and then, of course, the pandemic put a stop to that because we were wondering what we were coming back to, if there was anything to come back to. So as soon as it felt like we'd regained some kind of traction, we opened up the campaign and there was incredible appetite. And, you know, this city, this state, I mean, to some of the questions that you and Jen have mentioned, is incredible in terms of the passion that people have. You know, and often I'm asked, why? I don't know if it's because we're forced to be in the cold for 8 months of the year, you know, and we need to find interesting things, stimulating things to do indoors and entertain ourselves. But You know, it's an incredible city that, as I think Jen used the term earlier, punch above our weight. That's what I thought when I first came to the city 14 years ago. You could see this was a city that had a ballet company, a serious symphony orchestra, multiple theater companies, a ballet company, an opera company. And, you know, for a city that is, 100,000 people, and then, you know, within the state. And, you know, it's amazing to me who our audience range from. You know, it's not actually the city that's primarily doing this, Northern Illinois. People come from Ohio. You know, they come from everywhere. So we have something special here. You know, I'm not sure we can quite put our finger on it, but I think we know that some of the component parts that comprise that, and try to make sure that we pay good attention to that and hear our audience and take them on this journey with us, where we give them to a certain extent what they want, and then, you know, great taste of menus to excite them with new kind of material.
Yeah. And the center complex, and that's to be completed. When do you think that'll be completed, by the way?
Oh, I know when it's to be completed. we have three auditoria, two are being completely rebuilt. So the powerhouse will become the Ellen and Joe Chakota powerhouse. That will open with our inaugural production in late October 2025, this year, which is so weird saying it. And then in early 26, around about mid-February, February 13th, I think, is when we will open the Hero Frankie studio. And these will be, and the spaces in between, we have a Hertzfeld Education Center, which is going to be a fantastic thing for serving the community, the young folks, because I think the public school system is stretched. You know, often the first things to get to go in cuts are the arts, music, and so we see a real need for that. And now we'll have this amazing space where people can perform and where people can hold conferences. They'll have full facilities, and that will open again in the fall. And as I say, then the studio will go quiet for a few months until we rebuild that and open in February 26.
That sounds fantastic, Jen.
It sure does.
Man, it sure does. Rick emailed. He's wondering about the quality and quantity of the talent pool needed to put on live theater in, for example, Dane County or the Milwaukee area. Is it hard to find actors, musicians, set diners, designers, and that sort of thing? Rick wants to know.
I don't think so. Forward, since its founding, and we're in our 16th season right now, part of our mission statement is providing employment for the Wisconsin theater professionals here in our state. We were founded during the 2008-2009 recession. A lot of equity, that means union theater companies, had gone under. We wanted to make sure that there wasn't too big of a talent drain. So usually between 90 and 95% of the folks that we hire every season, and we hire about 140 artists every season, and the vast majority come from Wisconsin. So there's tremendous talent here.
And I'm thinking about the number of people it takes to put on a production. It's a large number, isn't it?
Yeah, you'll look on stage and you might see a cast of one or two people, or maybe five or six people. You know, I'm not talking, obviously, the Christmas carols, like the rep puts on, those are our big extravaganzas, but a lot of shows you'll see just a few folks on stage, but that gives you no idea of the depth, the designers, the stage managers, the directors, the run crew, the artisans, the technicians that that put these shows together. The bodies on stage are just a mere fraction of the professional talent that it takes to do a show.
Yeah, and the marketing people. I mean, it just kind of goes on and on. And I know a guy who's into lighting, and I mean, just lighting itself it requires a lot of skill.
A lot of skill and a lot of different skills. So, you know, just thinking about the lighting element, mm-hmm. you're going to have your lighting designer. You're going to have a master electrician who's going to oversee the installation of the lights. You're going to have the light board operator who actually cues those lights. throughout the performance. You've got all the electricians who are hanging those lights and focusing those lights and taking them down again for the next show. It's, yeah, it takes a lot of different people with a lot of different skill sets to do what we do.
Jim is wondering, how is World Premiere Wisconsin funded?
That is an excellent question, Jim. The vast majority comes from contributions from the participating theaters, and they're modest, and they're sort of tiered so that what a community theater in Appleton is contributing is, you know, obviously going to be much smaller than what a large professional company. We ask our participating theaters for a tenth of a percent of their operating budget. But each company is producing their own world premiere out of their regular operating budget for that season. So it's really a relatively small amount of overhead that goes into all of the marketing and community building efforts that we do outside. I mean, we certainly received some support in our inaugural outing from business bureaus, from a few corporate sponsors, a few individual sponsors. It certainly does, you know, take that support, but we run it pretty lean in order to make it as easy for as many companies as possible to participate.
Sue emailed us and wanted to talk about another production. Murder for Two is coming to the Capital City Theater February 21st through March 2nd. It's written in music by Joe Kadassian, and lyrics, I think, Kellen Blair. Much was written here in Wisconsin by Wauwatosan Joe Kadassian. So, and this show's had worldwide success, Sue says, including in England, Canada, Japan, and China, and she says it is hilarious. So there's one example.
Yeah.
Yeah, we produced that, and we love having Joe in because he has a very large family. And we know we sell hundreds of tickets just based on Joe when he's in a show. So we're always welcoming him. And he and his writing partner put together, it's a very funny, skillful show. I saw it at Chicago Shakes initially, and it ran and ran. And in fact, they could have kept on going, but they had other productions coming in. So eventually they had to stop it. And then we produced it at the Rep, and we did absolute gangbusters with it. And as I say, it's always great having Joe back in town, and we love having him. Yeah. In fact, we're working on another piece with him right now.
Oh, wonderful. Attendance. Have you seen an attendance increase or an interest increase at the theater company's productions, or how has it changed over the years?
Well, I won't speak for Mark's company, just for my own, but you know, we have regular conversations from the leaders of the professional companies in the state. Everybody saw a hit of varying percentages with COVID, of course.
Yeah.
But I think really all these companies are building back really strong. I know at Forward, in the last, say, year and a half, five of the six shows are among our top sellers in our history. So we are now way ahead of where we were pre-pandemic. But things were pretty dark when we had to go dark. But I think we're seeing a lot of really robust audience enthusiasm for these live experiences that I think folks are valuing even more highly after we all went through the pandemic.
Yeah, it's that was a terrible time for everyone. Yeah. Although I must say it did increase the practically every author I've had on my show recently has said that they wrote it during COVID.
So sure.
There was a little uptick in that part of it anyway. Talking today with Jen Uphoff-Gray, creator of World Premiere Wisconsin, also the founding artistic director at Forward Theater Company, and Mark Clements, the artistic director at the Milwaukee Rep, and he's talking about The Crake, which is an Irish-inspired musical set to premiere at the Milwaukee Rep. We're going to talk some more about that. And also take your questions. What questions do you have about theater or maybe about The Crack or about other productions that you have attended. Love to hear from you. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Jan Upoff-Gray, creator of World Premiere Wisconsin, and Mark Clements, the artistic director at the Milwaukee Rep, and talking with him about giving us a preview of The Crack, an inspired Irish-inspired musical set to premiere at the Milwaukee Rep. You can join in 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. And the Crack starts this weekend, right, Mark?
We have our first preview tomorrow night as my stomach flips over because there's never enough time. But, yeah, we start our preview, official opening on Sunday, and we run through the middle of March, yeah.
It must have been fun, you know, and I would encourage anybody who wonders, should I go and see this? Go to the Milwaukee Rep website and just take a look at the snippets that are on the site about the music and talk about it. Was it a lot of fun to put together? Because it seems so much fun when I look at those snippets, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, it is fun. I mean, I think right now theater goers, we're living in very polarized times in general and in this country. And I think there is definitely a market for work that feels restorative and is fun, has some substance and brings us back as in the true sense of the idea of the shared experience, where the theater does that really well. So this is designed to be a very fun night with some substance and with some absolutely brilliant musicians, and just watching actor musicians and watching these guys in rehearsal is fun. You know, I find, you know, I always kind of balk a little bit, at the word fun. Just because I feel like I'm wearing three hats in this production. Artistic director of the theater, which always has a fiscal responsibility as a co-writer and also the director. And so, you know, I'm always relieved when people like it and, or it's sold well. And the one part is already dealt with. I mean, I think it seems that it's pretty much sold out for the next 2 months, or very rare few seats. So I think people are interested and inspired by this program today, probably book earlier. I know we always say that, but it's true. If you try and look online, you'll see that. And, head for March. So, I'm having as much fun wearing those three hats as I can.
Oh, man. By the way, what's the next show for Forward Theater?
Our next show is called Summer 1976 by David Auburn, and it is starring the brilliant Colleen Madden and Heidi Armbruster. It's two women in the summer of 1976. They're both mothers and different in every other possible way, and exploring the things that bring them together. There's a sort of undercurrent of what was life like during second wave feminism. And really what I'm terribly excited about is that these two actresses are going to be doing a bit of a high wire act, because they are going to be alternating who plays which role.
Oh,
so they are working hard. I think it would be safe to say they might be slightly terrified at this point in the rehearsal process, but they are both brilliant and rock stars. And I'm very excited. I can't wait to see it multiple times as they trade back and forth.
I was going to say a lot of people might be intrigued to go a couple of times at least, just to see the differences, for sure.
Yeah.
Talking about actors, I think David in Milwaukee has something that relates to that. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My grandfather used to always talk about Judith Light. I think she was with the Rep back in the 70s. And I know we have Willem Dafoe that came from Milwaukee. Are there any other notable actors that you can come up with offhand that came from Milwaukee theater?
Oh, well, Mark, start with you.
Well, I think Jen was going to answer, and I would love her to lead on that. I mean, Judith is, you know, a legend, and she started off as a an acting intern then. It was her first professional job, and, you know, we've been talking to Judith for a while now about doing something, but I was going to, Jen, you were about to say something, I think.
Well, I just, if you expand it to Wisconsin versus just Milwaukee, I mean, there's such a wonderful long list of fabulous performers with their roots here. You know, Tony Shalhoub from the Green Bay area, Brad Whitford, Jane Kaczmarek, Orson Welles, right? Didn't he start out here in Wisconsin? Of course, Lunton Fontanne with the fabulous Ten Chimneys estate. In Genesee Depot. I mean, there's a long list of wonderful theater artists who got their start here.
Yeah, absolutely. Barb had emailed us. Barb and her husband are probably on their fifth year of season tickets for Forward Theater. Always an exceptional. Barb says, always an exceptional value for our entertainment dollars. Can't believe the talent and professionalism they attract to our relatively small Midwestern city. And she mentions she loved Murder Girl.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Barb. I really appreciate that. That is what we are trying to do for you.
Oh, I hope you get that kind of response from people.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the big things, this harkens back to something I said at the beginning of the hour about that conversation that we try to have as a theater company with our audience, and to do that in a lot of different ways. You know, it's soliciting emailed feedback or comments on social media, but we do talkbacks after all of our performances, short ones. But after every performance, if you want to stick around for about 20 minutes and talk with the actors in the play and with me or the other artists involved, and it's a wonderful way to hear directly from people about how they are experiencing the work that we do, whether they're loving something or uncomfortable with something or feeling challenged or whether their thoughts are being provoked. That dialogue really influences the way we think about our programming for future seasons. It's very enriching and affirming to get to be in conversation like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, any comment to throw in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to hop back to the production, next production at Forward 1976 with both Colleen and Heidi involved. I mean, I would say that we have, you know, especially the actors that are coming out of APT and some of our Milwaukee-based actors, I think we actually have some of the best actors in the country, full stop. And the fact that they are on our stages is and right in that play, you know, I see Heidi, and so I will be there, and I'd want to see them, you know, flip-flopped on the roles. So I think, you know, people should definitely go and see two of the best people in the country, let alone in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and if I can just add, thank you, yeah. Mark. And I think you bring up a really great point. And I too, you've worked all over the country, I mean, all over the world. I spent 15 years working on and off Broadway in New York City. The caliber of what is being created here, of the artists, the actors, the designers, the directors, really is among the best happening anywhere. And I think it's partly because it's very wonderful to be able to build a life in a place like Wisconsin. And artists choose that very purposefully sometimes. Like, they could be hired on Broadway, they could be in a TV series, they could be in film, and many of the artists that live and work around the state have chosen to have a life here because of the many other qualities that all of us choose to have a life here. And I'm so grateful that companies like ours and all of the other wonderful theaters around the state provide them places to work.
How do you get involved with creating theater? How can somebody's interested, how do you get involved in it? That's a that's a tough question, maybe, or not.
It's such a huge question, and I think it varies. And what kind of theater do you want to make? Do you want to work in college theater? Do you want to work in community theater, professional theater, touring theater? Do you want to be an actor, a director, a playwright, a designer? It is a slightly different path for in all of those circumstances. But I will say, I think a lot of us are invested in and really focused on how do we create those opportunities. Mark, I'll let you talk about the incredible programs Milwaukee Rep offers for emerging artists in a lot of different disciplines. I know here at Forward, we do a lot of new work festivals to support playwrights. We also just launched a couple weeks ago the first ever Wisconsin Directors Lab, which was intended to provide education, support, networking for directors working in all of these aspects of our ecosystem. And it was great. We had over 115 folks from all over the state here Wow. for a whole weekend. So that'll come back. But I want to hand to you, Mark, because you do a bunch of educational things there.
Yeah, I think there's outlets for, you know, for if you're interested in writing or acting or being a technician. You know, there's a lot of career paths. You know, we hold career days. I think if people are interested, you can also look on the website. And there are always people to talk to at our organization, you know, that I know of that can advise, you know, offer career advice and next steps. And we get a lot of that. I think for, you know, it's a tough profession to choose, you know, because there's usually more positions, there's more people than positions available, and it's very competitive, and you do need a little bit of luck as well, being in the right place at the right time, having the right person to be your mentor or whatever. But I also think, you know, if it's a dream for people, then there's a million reasons, and there's probably a million people who try and talk you out of that dream. And I think if you're focused and go question everything, well, you know, why couldn't I? You can write a book on things why you shouldn't do something. I mean, when I'm programming plays, I think one of the things that's helped me is just kind of having a healthy disregard for everybody who says to me no. You know, I mean, it kind of fires me up. And I think if you're that sort of person, you go, I want to write a play, then write a play. Nobody's stopping you doing that. And then, you know, it's not a thing until it's a thing on a page. And then try and find someone, talk to someone who's prepared to read it, critique it, be open to that critique, whatever it is, and just, you know, hone your craft. That's how everybody gets going at some stage. And you know, for some things, there needs to be a formal training. And, you know, if you feel that's where you want to spend your time, then just go for it. Life's too short not to do that. That's my view.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, that, you know, with the center, the new center opening, what are you planning for that in terms of a production? Or haven't you thought about it? Oh, I'm sure you've thought about it.
Well, yeah, we're actually announcing our inaugural season on January the 27th in the Pabst Theater because we don't have a main stage. And it's kind of amazing. I heard this yesterday. That actually knocked me over because I thought, you know, the Pabst seats 1,380 people. I know this because we do Christmas Carol in there. And we have currently a waiting list of 70 people waiting to hear our inaugural season. And I'm very excited about that. We're going to have 12 magnificent performers. So the cat will be out of the bag on the 27th. And you'll get a snapshot at least of what the first season will be.
Well, I tell you what, it has been a great pleasure for me to talk with both of you today. And you both have been very successful, and I wish you continued success. Jen Uphoff Gray, creator of World Premiere Wisconsin and founding artistic director at Forward Theater Company. Mark Clements, artistic director of the Milwaukee Rep. Thank you both for being with us today. It was a real treat for me and I think for our listeners as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you. You for joining and listening in today. This and all of our shows are a team effort. Our producers, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and stay with us. Lots more at stir here on WPR News.
Sure you know. you.